Fearless Flyer. I am James, and with me, my co-host, Grant. How are you today, Grant?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, James. Looking forward to discussing this one here. It's an interesting one.
We're episode 8 today, and we're doing clouds and fog. The previous episode, episode 7, we discussed turbulence and sort of the levels of turbulence and how whilst you're in the air, although it may feel rocky, there's nothing to be worried about whatsoever in aircraft and crew tested and trained to deal with turbulence and everything. We also briefly mentioned the formation of clouds, which are just the brief overview is that they're basically drops of water or ice crystals that are floating around the sky really close together and gives that fluffy appearance. So this episode, episode 8, we're going deeper into clouds and fog. So Grant, why did you want to spend a whole episode dedicated to clouds? Because as I've just said, they're basically just drops of water or ice crystals that fly around in the sky. And after we've gone through testing of aircraft, I'm sure aircraft are designed to be able to fly through them. So why do we need to spend a whole episode on them?
Yeah, I wanted to spend a whole episode dedicated to clouds because how they form and disperse are a fundamental driver of turbulence. Obviously, turbulence is significant in that it can exacerbate people's anxiety. So for us as pilots, the knowledge of the science of meteorology and thus clouds is an indication of what is happening in the atmosphere. The location and type of cloud is evident of weather such as frontal systems or, say, thunderstorms. And thus, within that type of cloud, what we can expect such as rain, hail or icing, and, of course, the type of turbulence that may be encountered. So if we can help you understand the clouds a little bit better, then you will understand how we as pilots use them to reduce turbulence and how they also enable us to predict certain flying conditions. But before we talk about what a cloud is, we need to kind of comprehend a bit about the atmosphere, the mass of the atmosphere above the Earth's surface. Approximately 50% of the atmosphere's mass is within the first 18,000 feet of the surface. So that's for kilometers, just under 6 kilometers or miles, about 3.5 miles. And 75% of the mass of the atmosphere is within 36,000 feet. So most jet aircraft cruise between 28 to 42,000. So that's well above the 50% of the Earth's atmosphere. Also turboprop aircraft, they also generally cruise above 18,000 feet. So bear in mind that's 50% of the atmosphere is located below 18,000 feet. And thus the majority of the weather is therefore located in the first 18,000 feet of the atmosphere. So let's talk about how cloud is formed, and you'll see why most of the cloud is located in the lower parts of the atmosphere. So what is a cloud? The invisible parts of a cloud you can't see is the water vapor in the air, and the lower parts of the atmosphere holds more water vapor than the upper atmosphere. A cloud is simply a mixture of gas, liquid, and solids, gas being water vapor, liquid being water droplets, and solids are ice particles. And all three of these are suspended in the air or held up by whatever's the driver is that causes the air to rise in the first place. So we'll talk about these rising forces soon.
So the water vapor in clouds, how exactly does it just like evaporate from, say, the ocean?
Basically. Another way of looking at it is you hang your washing out on a clothesline on a sunny or windy day and it's all wet. And later on when you come to collect it, it's all dry. So what's happened is the moisture in the clothes has evaporated. And within the word evaporate is the word vapor. So this vapor, it's just drifted off into the atmosphere. The same thing is happening whenever air touches, say, water, such as lakes, rivers, a swimming pool, the ocean, or even, for example, damp ground. What is simply happening is water is being heated by a heat source, so the sun, for example, and this causes the water molecules to get very excited. And as they have now heated up a little, they change from a liquid into a gas, which is a vapor. And as a result, they rise into the atmosphere. So the higher the temperature of the surrounding air, or the higher the air pressure, the more water vapor the air can hold. But we finally reach a point where the atmosphere can't hold any more water vapor molecules. And it says, I've had enough of this. And we term that as the air being saturated. Or we can also say that what we call in technical terms, the air is at saturation point. But you can think of it as something more like 100% humidity. At this point, if the air temperature drops or the air pressure decreases, some of these vapor molecules will then start to condensate and return to a liquid form. And if enough of this occurs, we see this as a cloud. If it's really cold, then they might even turn, say, to a solid, and that would be ice. So to get a cloud in the sky, we need moist air, and that is air with vapor in it.
So apart from this evaporation of air that creates the moist air, is there any other way of sort of creating clouds?
Yeah, so that's one part of it, moist air. But what we really need, we need that moist air to rise so that it will cool down. So what can cause moist air to rise? There are five different lifting forces, and the obvious one is being convection. So, for example, say the sun heats up a dark patch of earth like a forest, the passive layer above this dark surface then starts to rise. So that's convection, right? So that's done by the sun. Another lifting force could be, say, a range of hills or a mountain range, the Andes in South America being a good example, which run north to south and they're very high. So when moisture-laden air comes off the Pacific Ocean, it hits the Andes and it's forced to rise, and we call this orographic lift. Another one is frontal lift. So if you have a mass of cold air running into a mass of hot air, the cold air will undercut the warm air and force the warm air upwards. There are two other less obvious ones, and one of them being turbulence, say when a strong wind blows over a rough surface, and convergence, which is a bit out of our attention zone for this discussion. Needless to say, it's related to frontal systems.
So basically, clouds are just moist air that's lifted off the ground into the air.
Yeah, that's right. So we now understand that lifting forces are needed to be in play, and most of these lifting forces are near the Earth's surface. So most lifting takes place in the lower parts of the atmosphere, and hence most of our cloud, and hence the mixing of the air in the atmosphere, takes place in the lower atmosphere, say up to 18,000 feet. As a result of this, there's more, generally more turbulence in the lower parts of the atmosphere.
So what is fog then, if it's fog? The clouds as it's touching the ground?
Yeah, it would be worth touching up on that now, because fog isn't lifted, but it's simply a cloud touching the ground, maybe like a lazy cloud. We'll talk about fog at the end of this episode, because that's got its own unique characteristics to it as well.
So when you look up at the sky, there's always multiple types of cloud. You can see the sort of thinner stuff right at the top, and then there's the big clouds, and there's those grey ones you can see with the rain on. Those are sort of generic types that the average person will think of. But are there like specific types of cloud?
Yeah, good point. In classification terms, there are 10 main cloud types, and it would be rather dreary going through here listening to me go on about different clouds and their characteristics. So what I'll do is I'll put a link in the show notes that'll take you to some pictures showing you what they look like. But we can simplify them into four families. We would call that high clouds, middle clouds, low clouds, and clouds of vertical development, which means they go through all three levels. So as well as this, clouds can be identified by the way in which they form. So you have two basic types. You have cumulus and stratus. So cumulus clouds form on rising air currents. So like, as I said before, the ground being heated up and air starting to rise. And these clouds, they look big and fluffy, like cotton looking clouds, cotton balls in the sky. The other type of clouds are stratus clouds, which form in horizontal layers. And they usually form as a moist layer of air that is cooled below its saturation point. So we'll touch upon these clouds just to give you an idea of the three different levels, and then you'll see how we interpret them from flying. So high clouds are called cirrus clouds, and cirrus is Latin for a curl of hair, and they're generally whitish and hair-like. And another term people use, they say they might look wispy. They can give an indication of an advancing weather system, such as a low pressure system, like a storm. As they're very high, they're generally just composed of ice crystals, and they have very little effect on flying. However, sometimes, very rarely, we can get moderate turbulence in them. Middle clouds, they generally range from, say, 6,500 to 23,000 feet. This figure is a bit higher in the tropics, and it's lower as you go near the poles. But as you can hear already, as most aircraft are flying above 30,000 feet, we would only be in this area whilst climbing or descending. And these clouds are generally called cumuloclouds, and in Latin that means accumulation or a heap or a pile. And they can be composed of water droplets or ice crystals, and they look like cotton balls in the sky. They also have a base, defined base, and that's where, at that base, that's defined as where the moist air has become saturated. They can have a lot of vertical up and down motion in them. They're dense and they generally have very sharp outlines. They are bumpy to fly through. So when we do fly through them, we generally have the seatbelt on as we fly through them. And they can grow bigger. And we'll talk about what happens when they grow bigger in the final classification. But this middle area of the sky, we can also get a cloud that is from an approaching warm front. So say a stratus form cloud, and it's like a smooth cloud covering the sky, and it will likely have a lot of moisture in it with a potential lot of icing. So they're very cold, but otherwise generally smooth flying conditions. And then the third classification, low clouds. They're classed as clouds from the surface to roughly 6,000-7,000 feet. They're generally known as stratoform, and this word strato means layer. It's Latin for layer. These clouds are generally widespread, like a blanket, and they generally occur near warm fronts. So think of things like drizzle and rain. So these clouds are associated with a frontal system. They're generally smooth to fly through. Okay, the fourth one is clouds of vertical development. And as stated in the middle cloud classification, we talked about cumulus, these lovely cotton ball clouds. They can grow to become big, grumpy teenagers called thunderstorms. So they're getting rather large now, and they've got a lot of vertical movement in them. They can grow to get really high. So say starting at a few thousand feet to, in the tropics, well over 60,000 feet. So they're now called, the technical term for them is cumulonimbus, or we call them CBs for short. And the word nimbus, incidentally, is Latin for rain.
So basically, with those two Latin words together, because you said that cumulus means heap and nimbus means rain, it's a heap of rain in Latin.
Yeah, that's basically right. And you see these developments, you can see them in summer when they start with these nice little fluffy clouds, but they can grow. And they're commonly called thunderstorms by the weatherman. If you're listening to the radio and they're talking about the weather for the day and they talk about the term thunderstorms, or the weather person on TV is talking about the weather for tomorrow, the word thunderstorms is cumulonimbus, or CBs for short. And these can deliver heavy rain, hail, lightning, a whole mix of stuff. Okay, so the lower levels of these cumulonimbus clouds, they generally consist of water, and the middle levels are a mixture of super cooled water or ice crystals, and way up high, just ice crystals. And our weather radar, we can detect the vertical movement of water or ice crystals, and thus they can give an indication as to the level of turbulence we can expect. There'll also be turbulence nearby the clouds, so we keep our distance from them. We can also see sometimes at the top of these clouds, like an anvil, it's flattened out smooth part, and there's a lot of turbulence in there, so we visually avoid them and also use the weather radar to avoid that as well. So we get a lot of information from our weather radar about the intensity of these thunderstorm clouds. We can't go over them and we don't want to fly through them, so generally we just go around them.
So most clouds are fine to go through and don't really do anything, but cumulonimbus you don't really want to be flying through.
No, we don't want to be flying through, especially in the upper part of the cloud, because there's a lot of vertical updrafts and downdrafts. So there's some exceptions to these four classifications. Mountain waves, we talked about that in the last episode about wind rising up over a large range of mountains. So as it rises, it's relatively smooth. As it rises up over the range, it gets to the top and the airflow pours down the other side. So think of a rock in the middle of a river stream. And as the water hits the rock, it initially goes around it smoothly, but behind it, the water's getting all churned up. So the exact same thing's happening in the air, but this time vertically. So the air downwind behind the mountain range, it's bouncing up and down for ages, and you get rotating eddies in the air forming literally downstream of the mountain range. So with a high moisture content in the air, we get distinctive clouds. They're called lenticular clouds, so they're lens shape, and they extend above the height of the mountain range and downwind. Also, downwind and below the ridgeline, we can get a phenomena called rotor clouds. And what we'll see is a long line of these clouds called stratocumulus clouds. What all this is saying is don't fly at 90 degrees to these clouds because it's going to be exceptionally turbulent. So we avoid flying in those types of clouds there.
So clouds can give quite a bit of information of like how smooth the air is going to be and what to really expect when flying.
You get a huge amount of information from the clouds, definitely.
And then you said you were going to go back about fog. So do you want to just explain a bit more about why it's a lazy cloud as such?
Yeah. So fog, yeah, it's a lazy cloud. Fog is simply a stratus type of cloud that touches the ground, and hence we get smooth flying conditions in it. So what you need for fog, you need a relatively high humidity and a small dew point spread to get fog. So dew point is the temperature at which the air's got to be cooled down to become saturated. That is, so it condensates or turns from vapor into water. And so that's what we say when the spread between the temperature and the dew point is small, the air is nearly saturated. And thus a small drop in temperature will cause it to condensate and thus become a cloud. In other words, it's reached 100% humidity. What can cause this temperature to drop near the ground? Well, a clear night and light winds, the ground will cool down significantly. If the air above it is moist and the temperature goes below the dew point, fog occurs. And this is called radiation fog because the ground has cooled by radiating its heat away and cooling down. Another example is if, say, warm air crosses over a cold land or over a sea surface, the same thing happens. Think of sea fog or fog on coastal areas, and this is called advection fog. And there are a few other types, but these are the two main types. So fog at an airport is obviously a problem as the pilots can't see anything, and you'll know that from driving to or from the airport on a foggy day. But we'll discuss how we take off and land in fog in another episode. Flying in cloud, whether it's fog, which remember is a cloud, but flying in cloud can be extremely disorientating as the senses in the body start to do weird stuff and one can become extremely disorientated. So we do this by sole reference to our instruments. So to fly in a cloud, we're required to have what's called an instrument rating. In essence, it's the ability to fly in instruments and not only navigate, but also overcome the disorientation of having no outside visual clues. But we'll talk about that, about flying in cloud, in a later episode dedicated to instruments. So does that all make sense there, James?
Yeah, so we've discussed what causes cloud and what clouds are, the general types of clouds and how pilots can use them to see what sort of the weather conditions are. And you can also look at type of cloud and like sort of expect if there's going to be turbulence.
Yeah, that's right. And bear in mind, it's not just the clouds. By understanding what's happening with the clouds, we can kind of work at what's happening around in the atmosphere, the parts you can't see as well. Because remember, these currents are going up and down all the time as well. So as a result of this, this knowledge, we will liaise with the cabin crew as to what level of service we can expect flying in the atmosphere. And we also gather information from other aircraft and air traffic control, and we use their weather radar to avoid areas of turbulence. So from this discussion, we can understand now that most of the weather is within 18,000 feet of the Earth's surface. And as a result, the turbulence will most likely occur. If you're going to get turbulence, it'll most likely occur on the initial climb out or the final descent. And that's generally when you're seated with the seatbelt sign on for those stages of flight anyway. These clouds and the turbulence associated with them are generally unavoidable. However, they only create light turbulence with the rear odd patch and moderate, but only for short periods of time. Large vertical clouds, the thunderstorm cumulonimbus clouds, we just simply avoid them. We use the weather radar and we also look out the window. You can see them. And so we avoid those there. Fog is a cloud touching the ground, and everyone thinks fog's associated with cold weather, but I've seen fog in over 30 degrees centigrade or 80 to 6 degrees Fahrenheit, and we can take off and land in it, but there'll be more on that in another episode. Oh, good.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, welcome back, James. Have I bored you?
Okay, so going into our next episode, we're going to be discussing extreme weather. How, as Grant, as a pilot, he can treat each of what happens in this sort of aspect of weather. So we're going to be discussing things such as really strong winds, wind shear, contamination in the form of ice or snow, lightning, space weather, which does actually occur, and it's not just a vacuum up there, and volcanic ash. Anything you wanted to add there, Grant?
No, it's good. The miracles of meteorological science do impose upon us some very interesting flying conditions, and we've developed systems on board the aircraft to mitigate these and also deal with them in ways that means we can operate our aeroplane 24 hours a day throughout the whole year in many different levels of weather. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to discuss those items there. Yeah, that's about all I want to talk about on the clouds. I hope it hasn't bored you too much. As I say, there's some information in the show notes on those clouds. They'll take you to a picture of them so you get an idea. And looking forward to the next episode.
Yes, sweet as. So next couple of weeks, we're doing the episode on extreme weather. So I hope you've enjoyed that, guys. Don't hesitate to get in contact with us on any form of social media. I believe you put those links in the show notes, Grant.
Yes, they are there, yeah.
Sweet. So from me, it's a goodbye and have a good day, everyone.
Yep, from me, goodbye. Thanks for listening, and look forward to talking to you in the next episode.